Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Juliette Tlebi, standing in for Bright Kamala this evening and tackling your questions will be Rowan Williams from Nitrogen Fund Managers when we can rouse him, and Nick Crail from F&B Wealth and Investments. If you'd like to send questions to us, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Nick, good evening to you there. And there's Rowan. Excellent. Good timing, Rowan. But before we get to you, while you connect to your audio, Nick, it wasn't a great day today, but it wasn't catastrophic, I didn't think. I mean, it certainly wasn't US markets level of sell-off that we've experienced in the last 2 days. So comparatively speaking, why are we outperforming at the moment? Yes, I do use that term with a pinch of salt.
I think if you have a look at global markets and specifically developed markets in general, and here I'm going to use the US as the proxy for that, there's been significant outperformance over the last couple of years out of those markets, largely on the back of a significant amount of stimulus, that central banks put into, the economy, but not only the economy, into consumers' hands in the form of money, which they then went out and spent. Now, it seemed to me at the time, and it still does, that was a bit unfair as a whole, as emerging markets, the poorer cousins, as you will, didn't have that opportunity to get that sort of level of stimulus coming through. So our economic growth has been a little bit more pedestrian, and recovery has been somewhat more pedestrian than what you've seen. Obviously, now with the threat of inflation and potential impending economic doom through recession, at the moment, you're watching a lot of those companies in the US that were beneficiaries through a lot of that stimulus coming under a lot of pressure. Because we didn't and weren't beneficiaries, we're less exposed to, I think, the sort of downward trajectory, which puts us in, on a relative basis, pretty good stead.
Yeah, I mean, that is a fascinating silver lining you just drew out there for us. But it's absolutely true. I mean, the argument cannot fault it. Rowan, nice to see you there. Nick was worried that we would have to sob over the markets together with just him on his own. But here you are to keep us company. Your thoughts on whether the sell-off, though, is overdone. And Nick and I were chatting and particularly in the US, we were chatting briefly before we went on air about what happened to share prices in companies like Target and Walmart. And we can talk about Massmart today, although it did recover. I mean, are these not extraordinarily excessive moves to the downside? Or are they rational?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting to see. So, it's quite a multifaceted sort of answer, because I think what's happened is some of it is the market structures change. We've certainly seen in, say, the last 5 years, as more and more market participants have joined markets and have become more active, that shares seem to be more sensitive to short-term price information. So you see larger on-the-day price moves from news flow on a particular stock, be it Walmart, be it Massmart, other stocks where there's quarterly earnings updates, and you see up to 20% drawdowns. That's been more the recent theme in terms of sort of shares have been going down rather than up. So that's an element of it. The other element, I think, is valuations did get very high and very extreme by our views in US markets. I mean, a number of drivers of that. There were record earnings, there were share buybacks, there was record low interest rates, excessive liquidity. All those things drove stocks to get to overstretched levels, and now they're normalizing and they mean reverting. You could argue the returns that we've had really in the last 2 years have borrowed something from 2022. So now 2022 is giving back some of, what we enjoyed in the past, and sort of mean reverting to more rational valuations. So things like the CAPE, the cyclically adjusted PE ratio, have been bandied about. I think they are quite relevant. And from that perspective, share prices still have some way to go to mean revert.
And how much, when you say some way to go, I mean, because, this is the big, unknown, how much, at what point in the bear market are we? How much further could we fall? If you had a wild guess at this.
I was at an industry, sorry, just quickly at an industry talk, and yeah, the guys think a long way still, so that's the view.
Nick, do you share that view? Do you think we're only in the beginning stages of the sell-off, or do you think we're sort of halfway to two-thirds of the way through?
Yeah, I think a lot of the sell-off is already in the price, right? So I think there's been a fair amount of pain. And obviously we talk in general terms around the market in general, which is ridiculous, right? So you've got certain stocks that were very expensive and have come off and will continue derating due to their sort of valuations, and others that never got particularly expensive that will only sort of derate to a much lesser sort of extent. So I think certainly it's a active fund picker and stock picker kind of market at the moment, opposed to just talking about the amorphous market as a whole, because I think things are very different. But talking to Rowan's point earlier, I mean, the volatility that you're seeing in the market, in my view, is irrational. It's extreme. It shouldn't react like this, and it really has moved away from fundamentals. There's no ways you can tell me, based on one company's shorter-term earnings estimates, and quarterly results, that a company as large as a lot of these sort of beasts that are out there should devalue by 20%. It's ridiculous. So at some point we're going to hope that the market itself starts normalizing it and looking at what's more important for these valuations, which are the fundamentals. It is the long-term kind of trajectory for companies, and not to be so focused on these quarterly earnings numbers, which are just by themselves very volatile as well.
Well, I suppose you take out the focus on the quarterly earnings numbers, you take out an entire industry. I mean, the industry, sort of the entire finance and asset management industry, especially not necessarily in South Africa, but in the US, has built itself. But I can't say that those layers will be, and a removal of those layers are necessarily a bad thing for humanity. Just on individual stocks, before we get to questions. On Massmart, for example, and keeping with you, I mean, I was saying to you before the show, I didn't think the results were so catastrophic. I didn't think it was such a terrible sales update. It wasn't great, but there were some small, comparable store gains, which actually means they're holding their own. So don't just look at the overall sales picture. Look at the like-for-like sales picture. But you poo-pooed me straight out of the water. However, would you say that a 7% fall, which is where the stock ended down, is a bit more rational than 13%, which is to the extent that it fell this morning?
Yeah, I think if you're looking at Massmart specifically, you're really buying that stock for a turnaround, largely in Game, right? So Game has been a disaster. They've tried one or two things that hasn't necessarily worked over the last sort of 5, 7 years. And ultimately, we're still in this trajectory where we need to normalize that and ultimately get further and better sales coming through there. I think if you have a look at Macro and Builders, both of them were slightly weaker than what we would have wanted, both off relatively elevated bases, but they certainly weren't accelerating in terms of growth rates. Like for like was down, on a quarter and quarter basis, or a half year sort of basis, as well as a little bit longer term. Although the numbers themselves, they're still growing, and I think there's, these are solid businesses. It really comes around the turnaround in Game, and those numbers they weren't terrible, as you said, but they certainly weren't exciting, which is, hopefully what the market is wanting to see happen.
I mean, Rowan, do you think actually I'm being too generous that actually Massmart deserves the thrashing that it gets at the market's hands? That's if you're in a turnaround story with Game, for example, oh, there's Nick. That's a 0.9% drop in comparable store sales is just nowhere near good enough if you're trying to rejig this business, or is it acceptable?
Yeah, so I mean, it has been a disappointment, I think, because as Nick pointed out, it's a turnaround story. The business has become very highly geared. So what you see is, highly geared businesses are quite sensitive to the trajectory, I guess, of a turnaround. And to some extent, it's rational in that investors are constantly sort of having to reject the sort of future forecasts and the outlook, and sort of at the margin can make quite a big difference. So overall, I think it's been disappointing. The pace of the turnaround's been slower than the market would have anticipated. And I guess given the sensitivity of the overall turnaround to the valuation case, the metrics, that it to some extent does make sense that it prices like this. So I think until the market sees tangible sort of delivery on the turnaround prospects, particularly in the game businesses we're mentioning, it will continue to remain vulnerable and volatile.
Yeah. Okay. Then moving on to a question on Vukile, which is also to some extent a barometer of the retail environment in South Africa. And the question is, Vukile's full year 22 pre-close presentation turned in some encouraging operating and trading metrics. Retail mall footfall seems to have returned strongly and corporate lease retention rates are holding up well. Any comments on the stock or a sector outlook would be most appreciated. Nick, going back to you, what did you think of Vukile? What do you think of them? And if you had to pick a REIT in South Africa, would there be amongst the shares that you'd consider?
Yeah, so a little bit less on Vukile itself, and I didn't go through their sort of numbers in detail. I think looking at the industry, we've certainly known over the last couple of years that retail as a segment has been under significant pressure, and as expected, you know, you haven't seen any really new development coming on stream, number one. Number two, post sort of COVID lockdowns, we are seeing a return to some sort of normalization and an appetite for people to be at malls, number one. Number two, for retailers to trade there. So the long-term outlook, I think, is somewhat better than expected, and I don't mind the sort of retail exposure, depending on exactly where it's situated and what sort of class of assets you've got, in terms of the overall sort of property sector. Obviously, industrial has continued to do quite well and has been quite defensive throughout the sort of process. And the real area that you've wanted to avoid and perhaps continue to want to avoid is office, largely saturated. And again, a lot of uncertainty as to the appetite for further office space in an environment where, you know, we work from home perhaps a little bit more. So continued uncertainty there. Yeah. From a valuation perspective, I think, you know, if you're looking at the yield and a lot of the industry itself has, you know, normalized their balance sheets, but found themselves in a better sort of position. And the yields they're paying out, I think, are sustainable and relatively attractively priced. I think a lot of the easy money has been made from, you know, prices really being put under a lot of pressure going back a couple of years, largely related to COVID. But I think, you know, when we hit an area of significant outperformance in property is going to be when there is demand for further construction to take place. So, you know, evaluating a lot of these portfolios just on their current yields is one way of looking at it, and certainly what the industry generally does. But that level of valuation is completely different to if you were to go out and build yourself another shopping center, as an example. Okay. Those costs are significantly higher. So that's when we'll see, I think, a significant re-rating, but that's not imminent in my view at the moment. So I'd certainly be neutral to underweight property as an asset class at the moment.
Okay. Rowan, your thoughts on Vukile? And I mean, if you look at that share price chart, which maybe we can pull up again, it's held its own during the market sell-off that we've experienced. So there you go. It really, okay, it's come off a bit from 14 Rand, but that's hardly terrible at its present price of 12 Rand 80. Does that kind of give you confidence when a share does that? It actually just, you know, it's quite steady, notwithstanding the chaos taking place outside.
Yeah, so I mean, I think what Nick was saying, the valuations have sort of moderated quite significantly. So the expectations are reasonably low, and obviously they have fairly high yields, between 9 and 11% you're seeing. So that also creates defensiveness in terms of at a price the yield may seem attractive. Vukile seems to have quite a supportive, I guess, investor base as well, which is something to look for. But lower debt ratios and quite significant diversification, particularly into the Spanish property market. So that has been, I think, and what you've seen is some of these European property markets have recovered quite well post-COVID, in fact, and particularly in the retail spaces, which is where they have exposure to. And so that is, I think, overall positive. Obviously, I guess the Rand weakening to some extent, less so against the euro, that would also sort of make it somewhat defensive. So that, and you've seen a lot of these property counters diversify either into Europe or particularly Eastern Europe. So I think that's those players that have done that have seen better ratings and sort of better share price performance.
Yeah. Can I just quickly ask both of you about the impact that you think the interest rate hikes that, well, so we had a 50 basis point interest rate hike today, and it does seem reasonable to expect at least another one in the next few months. what impact that's going to have on the REITs, the property shares on the JSE? Is it going to have a chilling effect on their share prices? You know, does it make you reevaluate whether you'd want property stocks in your portfolio, Nick?
Yeah, I think you know, obviously they have a fair amount of debt, right? So that debt, it does need to be serviced, and obviously rising interest rates over a period of time are going to hurt them. I think a lot of them has found very sort of favorable and locked in rates of sort of borrowing as well across their sort of portfolio, so that's going to be less important for them in terms of this. And really, if I were to look at the property companies as a whole, I think it really comes down to demand first and foremost, and then navigating, you know, the current sort of issues we have, whether it's weather related, whether it's Eskom related, whether it's you know, rates and taxes going up, etc. Trying to weather that and get footfall through to whatever sort of property that you have. I think that is going to be a lot more of an important driver in terms of these the valuation of these companies rather than a rising interest rate you know, environment.
Okay. Rowan, any further thoughts there before I move on to the next question, or should we just move on?
Yeah, so, I mean, Nick sort of pinpointed most of the issues. I think, yeah, on a relative basis, the yield sort of becomes slightly less attractive as you can get sort of a similar yield from cash or other low-risk assets. So that's something to consider. And I think you do have to look at the balance sheets. I mean, I think most have fixed a good portion of their debt and the level of their debt, but, you know, they won't all be the same. So that if you are going to be investing, I think look at the quality and then the cost of debt and how that may change to evaluate which ones are more attractive on a relative basis. Yeah.
Okay. Rowan, staying with you, there's a question on Investec and 91. And the question is, Investec came out with results today. Kindly ask your panelists about the investment case for both Investec and 91 shares. Is it prudent to hold both of them in my portfolio for the long term? And 91's taken it in the neck, but I don't know if that's just because it's reacting to, I mean, the last few days have been horrible for 91. Investec, not so much, and they came out with what seemed to be very good results today. Yeah, on both shares, or would you favour one over the other, Rowan?
So, I mean, if you recall, Investec spun out 91, but kept a strategic stake in 91, but it's unbundling, that's it. So if you were to, and looks like the end of this month, so if you were to own Investec, you are going to end up getting some more 91 shares. So, and I guess, so it's been a little bit sort of tied together, and it'll be less so. I think they're keeping 5%, but unbundling 10%. So, are you going to get a healthy bit of 91 shares? I mean, to some extent, they're both exposed to market conditions, general financial conditions. Obviously, 91 as an asset manager is somewhat geared to equity markets and capital markets. So as those go down and the expectation around performance fees and the AUM also goes down, so the profits are expected to decline. And I think that's why you've seen 91 come down so much. They also had actually fairly good results, but in the case of Investec, I guess more exposed to the credit cycle, which has been quite benign recently. They've done a good job of also fixing their balance sheet, and in the short term it looks like for South African banks at least, the rising rates, as long as they don't move too fast, is actually to their advantage. The endowment effect on the very large deposit base they have actually increases their earnings. So that's somewhat positive. I think, as I say, without putting too much credit stress into the system, which I don't think there is, obviously. But if rates go up, you know, maybe another 100 basis points, that sort of starts to swing. But they're also somewhat exposed to financial market conditions generally at cost of debt, equity. So I think that will be a little bit volatile in this current market environment. But I would probably hold both. I mean, I think maybe Investec and you'll get some 91 and keep the 91.
Nick, would you, I mean, you know, do you think, I mean, the both are decent companies, certainly, trading in maybe difficult circumstances, particularly in the case of 91. Would you buy either of them at this point? Would you sell one in favor of the other, or would you just kind of hold them, you know, if you already have a portfolio and you do have the, as Rowan said, you know, you're going to get a few 91 shares out of your Investec stock, would you just kind of not do anything?
So I think I probably at current sort of levels, I'd have a preference for 91 over Investec. Investec obviously, from a share price perspective, did incredibly well over the last sort of 12 months, 18 months. And so in that sort of environment, it's a lot more expensive than it was, number one. But really, if I were to look at 91, which I think over the last 18 months, in our view, has been a little bit, you know, the good news was largely kind of priced in. So we didn't see much sort of upside. But as you say, it's taken it in the neck recently. And I think that's largely not on the back of their results. I mean, they're fairly aggressively looking into new markets, both China and the US, to try and, you know, make and get a sizable presence over time in both of those markets. And they're, you know, what they've managed to do over the last year in terms of delivering on that sort of strategy has been very optimistic, I think. So it's looking pretty good from that sort of story. What's really happened to the share price is just, you know, the high correlation to equity markets as a whole means that, you know, AUM is going to go down, means their fees are going to go down in the short term. But again, it's very sort of short term. And I think over a longer period of time, 91 is starting to look attractive at these sort of prices.
Okay. And then two shares that have had very different experiences on the stock market, Sasol and EOH. The question is, may I please have the panel's view on Sasol and EOH? I hold both stocks, with Sasol on the profit side and EOH at a 30% loss. Would it be wise to average down my EOH? Nick, staying with you, in other words, buy more EOH, I guess, to kind of smooth out the entry cost. Would you do that?
No, I wouldn't do that. I think, you know, there are a bunch of companies out there, and I mean, EOH is certainly almost one of the ones at the top of that list that, you know, almost lit themselves on fire, I think, through corruption and the rest. So there's a fire that's on there, and it ultimately means that there needs to be significant changes. And I think the current sort of management team and board have really started affecting a lot of those sort of changes, but it's very hard to understand what reputational damage has been done to that business, and ultimately what, if any, liability is going to accrue to shareholders, I think, looking forward for some of the self-admitted sort of corruption that sort of happened in that entity. So for me as an equity investor, no, I would be staying very clear of EOH. Regarding Sasol, obviously a similar trajectory in terms of the ride down from a share price kind of perspective, but you've seen a lot of that sort of, you know, get back to its former glory, as it were. Balance sheet is in much better position, et cetera, et cetera. I think my problem with Sasol ultimately is that from an earnings perspective, I think it's looking solid and pretty strong at the moment, and good from a cash flow, great on the balance sheet's not a problem as well. Longer term, I still think that ESG concerns sort of are a headway for this company. Yeah. And so it's hard to see how they're going to transform the business and ultimately get a re-rating on the back of that. So relative to, let's say, the European energy sort of peers, who I think have the balance sheet and the flexibility in order to reposition their business, I think it's going to be more of a challenge for Sasol.
Okay.
So as much as there might be some shorter term upside, for me, they're question marks at this sort of level now.
Okay. Rowan, I don't know if you want to have a quick word on EOH, because or if you'd rather get your stock picks. I mean, personally, I think, you know, Nick says they've set themselves on fire, but I think they doused the fire. And if you look at a company like Alviva, which used to be Pinnacle, it took a long time, but they did come right. I don't know if you have a similar view or if you're in Nick's camp.
Yeah, look, I think and the board has indicated the shareholders need to give an indication what's next for the business. I think they have put out that fire, and sort of there was a bit of a fire sale of assets to reduce the debt significantly. So it looks like they're possibly going to put the entire group up for sale. So, you know, what the realization value they can get for all the assets or a possible delisting. But as I think Nick points out, the outcome's too uncertain to make it sort of a clear investment case. So I would agree, just sort of stay away. And, you know, I don't know where the price is right now. I mean, maybe you cut your losses or maybe wait for that sort of sale realization and sort of mitigate some of the losses, but I wouldn't add to the position here.
Okay. Yeah, and there may be a rights offer. That's another thing that's kind of weighing on their heads. Very quickly then, Rowan, sticking with you, your stock pick this evening.
Yeah, so we've chosen Sappi. I think what you're seeing is quite a lot of volatility in sort of the commodities, but the paper and packaging side has actually held up very well. Demand has been very good. What we've seen is quite significant pricing power come back in to the paper producers, which is a welcome relief. So there have been cost pressures, but those have been more than offset by price increases. Demand is robust. Sappi has been highly geared, and cash flows are good. They're making a lot of money. The DWP price has also held up very well, and they seem to be getting their operations in order, so making deliveries now. There have been some constraints in the ports, but overall, it looks like a good de-gearing equity story. A bit volatile, the stock, but I think there's quite a bit of upside from here still.
Okay. And Nick, sorry, very quickly, how about you?
Well, I'm feeling bullish. So I'm going to go for a U.S. technology company. At the moment, that's taken a significant bath. It's a company called Align Technologies. And effectively, what they do is clear braces. So in the orthodontics kind of field, opposed to you getting those almost railway tracks across your teeth, this is a clear kind of braces. 50% of the revenues are outside of the US. It is pretty global. It is in a market where its market penetration is very low at the moment. Longer term, I think that idea of people looking after their sort of teeth is certainly one that is going to continue playing out. Yeah. They are the clear sort of market leader in the sort of technologies, and it's derated a lot. Longer term, I see growth of, you know, in excess of 30% per annum over the next sort of 5 years, barring a little bit of volatility. And so I think it's very attractively priced and a good entry point.
Okay, great. I'm glad to see you're not bullish and not huddled in a corner in the fetal position, sobbing your heart out. Anyway, we shall leave it there. Nick, Rowan, thanks very much for joining us on this evening. Rowan Williams is from Nitrogen Fund Managers. Nick Crail is from F&B Wealth and Investments and joins Zanati for the Friday edition of Stockwatch at 7:30 tomorrow.